Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna in his Dwarka, Krishna's into Dwarka. 1139. Tame nere bala mudah. Strainam chanu vratam raha. Apramana vido bartur. Ishvaram matayo yata. Yes, what you have somebody? Gent? Tame nire bala muda. Strainam chanu vratam raha. Apramana vidur bartur. Ishvaram matayo yata. Marajis, ladies. Unto Lord Shri Krishna, Menyere took it for granted. Abalaha, delicate. Mudhaha, because of simplicity. Strainam, one who is dominated by his wife. Cha, also. Anuvratam, follower. Rahaha, lonely. Apramanavida, unaware of the extent of glories. Bartuhu, of their husband. Ishvaram, the supreme controller. Matayaha, thesis. Yata, as it is. Tam menire bala mudha strainam chanu vratam rahah apramana vidu bahartur ishvaram matayo yata. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Krishna, Lord Shri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Please repeat. The simple and delicate women, truly thought that Lord Shri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband. As the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Even the transcendental wives of Lord Shri Krishna did not know completely the unfathomable glories of the Lord. This ignorance is not mundane, because there is some action of the internal potency of the Lord in the exchange of feelings between him and his eternal associates. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways: as proprietor, as master, as friend, son, and lover. Hey, proprietor, master, okay. And in each of these pastimes, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Madhurya. Oh, I see, Vatsalya is son, okay. In each of these pastimes, he plays fully by the potency of Yogamaya, the internal potency. He plays exactly like an equal friend with the cowherd boys, or even with friends like Arjuna. He plays exactly like a son in the presence of Yashoda Mata. He plays exactly like a lover in the presence of the cowherd damsels. He plays exactly like a husband in the presence of the queens of Dwarka. Such devotees of the Lord never think of the Lord as the Supreme, but think of him exactly as a common friend, a pet son, or a lover, or a husband, very much dear to heart and soul. That is the relation between the Lord and his transcendental devotees, who act as his associates in the spiritual sky, where there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. When the Lord descends, he does so along with his entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world, where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the creation of the Lord. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or internal potency in complete negation of the influence of the external potency. The wives of Lord Krishna were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the internal potency, so that there might not be any flaw of exchange. And they took it for granted that the Lord was a henpecked husband, always following them in lonely places. In other words, even the personal associates of the Lord do not know him perfectly well. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? The word thesis writers, and the purport, the word, what's this, thesis? Word by word, yata, no? Mataya, oh, thesis. My opinion. Ishvaram mataya. Yata. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Associates, only places. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the cause of the creation, the ingredients of the creation, or the material and efficient cause of the creation. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only, and by no other means. But since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. So any comments? Questions? Complaints? Yes, sir.
I like the part in the end where he's talking about the different philosophers have all different opinions.
Yeah.
But because Krishna consciousness, there's so many apparent inconsistencies or contradictions. There's so many inconceivable things about Krishna, how he's all-pervading, but yet he's not all-pervading.
He walks, but he doesn't walk.
Right. And yet that devotees who know him, even if they... under the spell of Yoga Maya, they don't know his aspect as the controller. But all those contradictions are resolved. Mm-hmm. Last week, Hridayananda Maharaj said that we need to know him as the controller because we're in you know, in Maya, because we're in Maya. Yeah. But once you're liberated, then you don't need to know him in that way. That's not as important to know him that way. You can know him in better ways.
Yeah. So, for Arjuna asks Krishna, you know, I'm just an ordinary person. How can I meditate on you? How can I think about you? And then chapter 10, he gives these pantheistic reasons like that. I'm a taste in water. I'm a light of the sun. But he says, but what is the use of all this detail if you just know that I ekang sena stito jagat, with one angsa, one portion of my splendor, I maintain everything, the shark, you know, the mountains, the ocean. So if you know that aspect, then automatically you see everything else like that. You know? So then in chapter 11, Arjuna says, hey, can you show me that? You know, like that. You know? And he says, Borodon says, he says, hanta, which means like buddy, like that, or something like that. Hey, yeah, okay, buddy, I can show you, you know. It's just like, you know, you went to the Iraq war, part of Sartre, you ask, well, how do you use one of these? How do you use a bayonet? Like that, you know. He says, well, come on, tell me. And, all right, I'll show you. You know? So it's like, he can do it and everything else like that, but it's not something he really likes to talk about so much, so on like that. So Krishna is going to show Arjuna the Virat Roop, but he says, okay, buddy, I'll show you like that. But it's like that. It's not something he really wants to do or something like that. It's a minor aspect of his personality, you know. And so the same way, then once you know Krishna's personality, then automatically these other opulences are automatically included like that, you know, same point. One point that I always, for many, many years, you know, is confusing to me, this thing about efficient cause, material cause. And finally in my, you know, karma yoga, I was looking at different philosophers, and I read Aristotle. So these are Aristotelian categories. Where he gets them from, I don't know, but it may very well be that Prabhupada just adopted them because of the, you know, the classical British education, or Bhaktisiddhanta did, because they fit into like Sanskrit analysis too. So according to Aristotle, there are three causes: the ultimate cause, the efficient cause, and the material cause, like that. So what is the cause of what is the cause of this glass? What is the material cause of this glass? No. Metal, like that. That's the material cause, you know. Makes the glass is the metal. What's the efficient cause? No, the foundry. Yeah, and the ultimate cause is, then we wait, this example at least, is the workman, the craftsman, like that, you know. So the example the Vedas would give is the clay cup, the pottering wheel, and the potter. So the clay, the material cause is clay, the efficient cause is the wheel, and the ultimate cause is the potter, you know. So therefore... You know, when your father gives you $20, it's, you know, Friday night, there's a big basketball game going on, says, take a car, take your friends, go by, have a milkshake afterwards, get back by 10 o'clock. So 11 o'clock, the police call up and they say, hey, you got your kid here. You pulled him over for, you know, what we call dangerous driving. They had beer in the car, and what do you want us to do with them? Like that. So who's responsible for the drunk driving? Who's the cause of the drunk driving? The automobile, the beer. The beer is the cause, officer. You should arrest the beer. No?
Society has brought this child up in this
way. That's it, Your Honor.
We shouldn't indict the criminal, we should indict the society.
We'll bring them all in here. So the father is the ultimate cause, and therefore he has some responsibility for the thing, you know. But yeah, he used his good judgment. There was no indication he was giving the keys to somebody dangerous. But the efficient cause is the... It's not in this way. So therefore, yeah, who's culpable? Well, I mean, I've heard the Prabhupada says, yeah, Krishna takes responsibility for the jiva souls because he gave them free will and everything else, you know. So he takes some responsibility to deliver them, even though maybe he doesn't have to do it, you know. But he's, yeah, I mean, I'm the father, I got to do this, like that. But all of them, yeah, we're responsible for our own actions, like that. You know? We had this big program back in Tennessee, our North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, NEOS, a 501c3 profit federally exempt educational corporation. It's not religious. So every year now we've been organizing this event for like about 7 years. First of 24-hour kirtan, then they added this interfaith dialogue. Then we changed the title to Annual Symposium on Cultivation of the Human Spirit. Then we can use Light of the Bhagavat right away for themes. So this year the title was Married for Life. I think I mentioned that. About, you know, married for life, no divorce, married for life, producing life, children, not just biologically, but, you know, with life and spirit. And then finally, married for eternity, like that. And so Rabbi Rami Shapiro, you know him? Heard of him? He's a pretty famous guy, even in South America, they knew him like that. We did an interfaith thing at one's synagogue. It was very nice, you know. Oh, yeah, you know him. And you look on the internet. So he came and he talked about Jewish Kabbalistic tantric sex. Yeah. Do you know about that? You should know your religion.
Doesn't sound very appealing.
It wasn't. It was interesting because there's. I actually have it with me. He was going through the whole translation of Genesis, Adam and Eve. Okay. Yeah. He was going through the whole, and the Bible talks about God created the world, then he created Adam, then he created Eve, right, and this and that. And he was going through the translations and how in Christian Bibles mistranslated many times. And the word for the wife, it means she who like opposes like that, like always keeps you in line like that. You know, the marriage relationship is more like your wife is not there to say yes, Prabhu. She's more like, well, Prabhu, I don't know about this and that. And it's like argumentative type thing from the very beginning of the Hebrew. There you go. Mahaprasam Gijai. Yeah. So it was interesting. He was going through the whole thing, and this is part of the Kabbalah, which is a mystic Jewish tradition. It was very, the relationship between husband and wife was a sophisticated thing in terms of identifying each other in terms of a feminine and masculine relationship, and trying to fully realize, basically the idea was harmony, was his idea. We've been associated for quite some time there. Actually, he said, how long are you here? I said, just for a few days. He said, well, I'm teaching my class in comparative religion at the university, so please come. And we taught that and stuff. So he's one of our good contacts there for working. He'd go to the temple many times, take prasad and like that, you know. But finally, he was coming to this point of regulated sexual relations every Friday night, this and that, and so on. And you say, well, I won't go into detail, but yeah, there was a certain regulation on when you can have sexual relations, and it had to be a certain significance to it, too, like that, you know. So it was very informative, all this, wow, all this stuff, you know. And I wanted to ask him more details, is this true of all Jews, or just like a certain Kabbalistic sex, you know, sects or stuff like that. But we didn't get a chance to go into much detail. And then he didn't come, but I was able to talk to him. Professor John Tatamanil, and his family is from Madras? No, from Kerala. But he grew up in Bombay, and his mother came to America when there was a shortage of nurses. Remember sometime Gajananda was here, there was a shortage of nurses, so his mother came here and got a job. So from eight years old, he grew up in America. And he's a pretty prominent theologian at Vanderbilt, which is one of the best universities in the South. He's in the School of Divinity. And Radhika, our good disciple, you know, he knows him very well, and they're on different committees like that together. Actually, the whole community, the comparative religions community, is, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody else, what's going on. So he wrote a book, The Immanent Divine. And what it is looking at Paul Tillich, who's probably the most famous Protestant theologian in recent times like that. And very thoughtful people, and what he objects to is that God's in his heaven, and we're here, and this world's bad, and that world's good, and sometimes God comes and does things, but other than that, it's it. You know, he didn't like this idea of God. It was like, and he wasn't here with us all the time and stuff like that. So he tries to adjust it, approach it, from speculation, but also from devotion. You see, there's some sincerity, you know. So I saw him a couple times. We were talking, and one time he said, "Well, you know, we don't want to come to a conclusion too quick." Because if we do that, we'll be out of a job. Because they're theologians, right? So they saw the problem, they'll be out of a job like that. He was kind of joking, but he also appreciating this is something we do because, you know, it's part of our whole thing of establishing our position. But actually, he was committed to what he was doing like that. He was trying to use the jnana to understand what's going on. And they're very nice because it's challenging us. Oh, hari bol, Prabhu. You know, we're doing it because, what do you like about Krishna consciousness, Prabhu? You know, I mean, actually, one very senior devotee, one lady, she said, Prabhu, my husband, I won't mention his name, and Prabhupada, that was Krishna consciousness for me. At first he disappeared, then my husband disappeared, and then I just lost everything. I had no idea what was going on like that. So without some kind of nectar of devotion, Prabhupada says, without becoming a jnani, one cannot stick to the process of devotional service like that. You know? And then when we get a strong enough taste, then we it follows automatically. What's the verse that says? Yeah, this is second chapter. Yeah. So for our Bhakti Bhai Bhava certificate, you have to memorize 70 verses from the first 5 cantos. Are you ready? Okay. And no, you gotta. I actually have it right here. Yeah. And you have to write 100 pages of essays, questions. This is the standard. And 200 just questions on the first 2 cantos. And other than that, you know, you did this. This is the general standard. 200 questions. Read the first 6 cantos. 100 pages of essay questions. And yeah, but it's 4 years. Yeah. 70 verses, 4 years. That's not so bad. It's like, was 25, it's 12 and a half pages a year. Okay? Is that okay? No, 25 pages a year. So it's actually good, you know. And then you submit your detailed curriculum to the Ministry of Education. They say, okay, you're an official Bhakti Bhai Bhava center. And it's very important because the thing is, if after you finish Bhakti Shastri, there's nothing to do, then people just fall in Maya, right? But then some people, yeah, okay, now we go on Bhakti Bhai Bhava. And then you read Prabhupada's books. And I wrote up our whole suggestion for curriculum, you know. And one of the things, for example, our idea from Peru is that just by attending the full morning and evening program and doing 2 hours of independent study a day, you should be able to get your Bhakti Bhai Bhava certificate. It doesn't have to be a whole separate course or anything. The morning and evening program should be geared, you know, so that you're... And you're learning these things like that, not just verses here and there, you know. And also, go back over the basic books again. Now you do Bhagavad Gita again, but now you do it at Bhakti Bhai Bhava level. And you start taking out thesis and things like that. So many different suggestions about, our suggestions about how we're going to organize it. Our suggestion was anybody who takes the Bhakti Bhai Bhava certificate, you should be, you know, having your Sankirtan developed by then. And one acceptable method is to teach Bhakti Shastri 2 times, right? You get your Bhakti Shastri degree, you start studying Bhakti Bhai Bhava. Okay, then you, during those 4 years, you teach Bhakti Shastri 2 times. And there would be sufficient Sankirtan, you know, for us like that. What else? But, Tathamaneel. Yeah, so if you get this, come to the point of actually getting Bhakti, then automatically this knowledge and renunciation follow like that. So talking with him, so his book was he calls it dialogue. You know, he's of course, he's the person who's speaking for both people like that, between Paul Tillich, who is the most respected modern theologian, even devotees say, you know, nice guy, you know, and Shankaracharya, like that. Shankaracharya and Paul Tillich meet like that. And I was asking Radhika why they were doing all Shankaracharya, because he says he's the most translated and commented on person, that there's almost nothing really available in theology and from the different schools other than Shankara. And so if you're going to do something on Indian philosophy as a Christian theologian, you're stuck with this fact, the only guy with a body of literature and commentary is Shankara. And to start everything by yourself is a big deal, you know. And so then I read part of it, enough just before we met like that. And it was good. He was starting to take these ideas of Shankara and stuff like that and show how Shankara was basically saying that it was Advaita, that this world is not different than God. You can't separate it from God. And so we're always with God. It's not that he lives in heaven and we live down here and, you know, somewhere we go to heaven and enjoy the same sense gratification or something like that. So he was taking good advantage out of Shankara's position, which in some ways, what Shankara was meant to give something, right? Why did Shankara present this philosophy? Krishna told him to do it. Why did he do it?
To clarify the Buddhist.
What is Buddhist philosophy? Shankara is Advaita, Buddha is...
Buddhist is...
near Shankara is Nirvishesh, like that. Yeah. So Buddha said, everything is void, there's nothing. Everything is false. If you meet the Buddha upon the road, kill him, because Buddha is also an illusion. So I was trying to understand this, and I read Prabhupada says, it's incomprehensible. I go, oh, that's why, because I was trying to, like this and that. You know, when Buddhists came to our university, California, Freeborn Hall is the biggest hall on the campus, holds like about, I don't know, 800, 900 people in the dance area too. It was full. This guy was there in his robes and stuff like that. And they gave his whole lecture. It was very interesting. They finally finished off with his definition of God. Yeah. God is a circle with its center everywhere and no circumference. Trying to sell to the sell my product here. So I mean, some little kid might say, well, why do you call it a circle then? Why do you call it a circle, you know? But I was trying to contemplate it for about 3 days. You know, my dog saved me finally like that from this life. But that's, you know, actually the Upanishads say the same thing though, right? He walks, but he has no legs. He controls everything, but he has no hands. He never leaves home, but he's always everywhere like that. Because Prabhupada says he's trying to create this understanding that God's a person, but not like us, like that. So Upanishads also talk in this like tricky language to try and catch these like, you know, very intelligent, you know, fools like that. You know, very tricky ways. Oh yeah, like that. Yeah. So for a certain class of people. So, you know, Shankara came along to deal with these guys, you know, which I guess is almost the same. That's more like Nirvishesh than Shunyavad. It's everywhere, like that. And so that I was talking about our philosophy, and first off, he said, I was for Madhva Sampradaya. He said, oh, you're dualists, you know. Because Radhika is saying, yes, that Madhva's dualism is very extreme. There's you and there's me. There's God in the world. There's you and you know, us and God. But it's a very strong dualism like that. And he didn't like that. You know, that's actually what Tilak was almost fighting against. So it seems that Madhva had to do that because Shankara was so Advaita that he had to establish, no, there are differences, you know. It's all one. No, there are differences. That was like, you know. So he had, again, his philosophy. We the Tattva bodies are predominant Madhva sect, and we don't accept them like that. And we're coming from their Sampradaya, but we reject our Acharya like that in some respect. So then I was explaining our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, because he had some of his books there. We just wasn't, you know, there's so many things, you know. And his Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. So he was kind of grasping the Sanskrit, but like, you know, to put it together as a philosophy, it was like, oh, that, you know. And I said, Bhagavad Gita 9:4. He said, oh, one of my favorite verses, like that. You know, Maya Tatam Idam Sarvam Jagat Avyakta Murtena Matstani Savabhutanam Nachaham Teshva Bhastitaha. It's also quoted in Upadeshamrita. And I always thought it was kind of like a, you know, weird like technical verse. But as I understand, you know, Prabhupada quotes it again and again. And as far as I understand, that's a super essential verse for establishing Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. And actually, 2 days later in Rabbi Rami's class, he was asking the same questions. After the, you know, question, he said, I have a question, you know, about what is your idea about God and the world, the immanent. And I quoted that verse, and he said, you know, we went like this, you know, satisfied, you know. So that's the potency of the quoting scripture and stuff. It's more than just like it's produced by the expert. It has potency coming parampara like that, you know. So that's, you know, again, there's many different philosophers. And the thing is, when I taught Tom and Neil, when we were talking about these things, it was more than just like, oh, it's a nice intellectual idea. He seemed like, you know, it satisfied, because he's Episcopalian. He's an Episcopalian guy. So am I, Episcopalian. You know? So he seemed to be actually personally satisfied with this conception and stuff like that, you know. So it's a very nice preaching, many different areas, you know, preaching to people. But this is one class of people, are these speculative philosophers. And like you said, that's the business, is to speculate and this kind of stuff. And then, but again, it's normal. You know, how much sincerity is there? Yeah, we don't expect. People approach Krishna because the food's good, right? Good food and good music. You know, not all that sincere, you know. Have a lot rotten kirtan and a terrible feast, and they, yeah, you don't like it, you know. Other people approach because they can speculate. You know, they come because they're inquisitive. This is the greatest mental gratification, is speculating about Krishna. Yeah.
Oh, I was just...
Regarding that discussion about Tilak and all, I was remembering that, you know, normally the dichotomy that the theologians make is God transcendent, that is outside of, completely outside, nothing like the things of this world, or is he imminent, which is, you know, that he's everywhere, within divine within everything, you know, this pantheistic idea. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said his personality of Godhead is both transcendent and imminent.
Achinta.
Yeah,
he's not different from this world, both.
I met in Santa Cruz on book distribution a few years ago. I met the Father Timothy, the priest of the Greek Orthodox Church.
Oh, wow.
And I said that our position is that God is both transcendent and immanent. And he said, yes, you know, that's correct. And he took a Bhagavad Gita. He was very interested.
One lady came to the Sunday feast many, many years ago, big roaring Sunday feast. I think Charu was there. So a lot of people. She was looking for her son who'd left, and she was going to all the temples in America or something. And she was Catholic, and so she brought some local Catholic priest to come with her. She didn't feel comfortable going alone. And so the guy was kind of like, you know, and after she saw no one was going to eat her or something, she kind of walking around looking at everybody. He was kind of walking around looking bored, you know. Here I am, all these yogi guys, you know. But I started talking about the same point, you know, about our position. And right away, he like... like, well, these guys are dangerous. You know, this is a very fundamental point. There's a very famous movie of Jesus Christ. They show it at Easter. I think every year, about three nights or something, they show it. I don't know, somebody did. It's really good, you know. The guy who plays Jesus is like, you can't tell if he's a madman or if he's like, you know, Jesus Christ. He's just like, you know, intense. Wow, this guy nuts, or is he actually the Son of God, you know? So it's very like, realistic, you know, very good. So Anthony Quinn plays Caiaphas, the head priest. So finally they dragged Jesus Christ in front of the Sanhedrin at midnight when none of his friends were there to try him, and all the little demons are saying, oh, his followers ate corn in a codicil. You know, they didn't wash their hands and put each other in a Gayatri. So all these like things like that, you know. And Caiaphas, Anthony Quinn, is sitting there like, you know, looking at him, and Christ is in front of him. And finally he raises his hand, all the little demons become quiet. And he says, you're all missing the point. He said, well, what's that? He says he's the Son of God. They go, well, yeah, I guess you could eat corn in the codicil, the Son of God, like that. You know, yeah, I guess, well, you're right. That is a very important thing. So he asked him, he said, Jesus of Nazareth, I ask you, are you the Son of God? You know, then Jesus quotes something from the Bible, which, you know, Old Testament, which says basically yes. Then Anthony Quinn is like this tsunami just rising up in his body. He stands up and just rips this robe open. Like that. Says, God is one. Take him out, like that. Wow, you know, this is exactly this point. And a lot of Jewish tradition, Maimedes. Maimedes, one of the biggest acharyas in Jewish tradition. He wrote a book called Guide for the Perplexed. How long ago was that? Quite some time ago, no?
Like 1200s or something like that.
Very potent acharya. As far as I know, I was told, he said, not only is God impersonal, he must be impersonal. Like that. So within Jewish tradition, there's this strong thing of, one time it was explained to me that, yeah, God's a person, but he's always ahead of us, so much to know that we can, and that his personality is always ahead of us, so we can never quite have that relationship to him, you know, like that. So there's many different people. And this year, the dialogue was the most intense, because coming to marriage, also discussed the practical aspects. With Tamahar was there, who's head of the Grihastha Vision team. I remember if he's head or not. But 50% of all American marriages end in divorce now. It's really terrible. Then, if you take people who live together for 2 years, I mentioned that, if they separate, then it comes 70%. So practically speaking, the thing is America is just finished, you know. Then you're quoting from somebody, but he did a big study on civilizations, like about maybe like 70 years ago or something, from Oxford. And his idea was that marriage stability had nothing to do with civilization and its development like that. But after studying everything for 10 years, he came to the conclusion the exact opposite, that wherever the divorce reaches a certain rate, then that's when you see the decline and the collapse of those civilizations like that. So that America is in a terrible position like that, Terrible. Not just us, all over the world. Another study, many people feel I'm unhappy and it's because of my partner. And therefore they're resentful of their partner like that. I mean, they're married, but they resent them because you're making me unhappy. This is like 70% of all the marriages in the world, things like this. You know. Yeah. So very intense situation. And then behind it all is philosophical thing like that. What is marriage? What's the purpose like that? What is the higher ideal like that? Yeah.
The politicians are always talking about public education and how that, you know, our children are the basis of our future, and therefore we have to fund the public education and so forth. But marriage seems to be every bit as important in a child's life as having a stable, as having a good school to go to. They need a stable mother and father. Yeah.
So when our mother Shubhra, who just became a principal like that, want her to write on marriage education in the public school system. Because even if they just start a little bit from the very youngest age about what are boys, what are girls, what do they expect from marriage, what can we hope in this world, they solve the problem. You know, I mean, they teach biology, they teach chemistry, they teach mathematics, but they don't teach the most important things. And it should be there. There should be education and sociology. In that respect, it's a whole thing. The world is like in a very, my experience now in South America, people are approaching them like asking for books. It's like they go out in karmic clothes, they go, hey, yoga and meditation. They say, oh, yeah, okay, yoga, okay, are you Hare Krishna? So, yeah, what do you got? It's like, they're shocked. Yeah. Apparently somebody in Lithuania or Slovia or something, he was at some interview and he said, well, we tried monarchy, we tried, you know, fascism, we've tried communism, we've tried consumerism. What about Hare Krishna? many people, it's like, hey, we tried everything else, but why not? What do they got to say? I mean, their books are going out, we see them, their community, they're growing, you know. So my experience, many places, especially South America, were just like, Prabhupada says, first they'll laugh at you, then they'll attack you, then they'll start to take you serious. And it seems like almost on a global level, we're almost coming into that phase. But now, if they're going to take us serious, we've got to have something serious to say. Yeah. Many times people ask you, well, I don't know, we do the book. You know? Yeah. Why don't you explain it to me? Yeah. So it was a very practical meeting. And then the Christian guys, one Catholic, one Presbyterian, they had some higher idea. Again, about marriage, just for like, and one of my disciples, she asked, what can I do? What can I write? She's a reporter. So she went to a nunnery convent in Peru. And it's a cloistered where they go in, the girls go in, after some time they make a thing. And it was very old, like, you know, maybe, you know, 300 years old or something. And so she went there and they were all dressed in black, everything white. And two of them, the ladies, they'd been nuns for like, since they were like 17 years old. They're like, you know, one's like 57, the other one's 62, and like that, cloistered. Don't come out. So she said they were on one side, and she was on the other, and there's like these iron bars, like making a grid, about like this. And they sit on one side, she sits on the other, like that, asking questions. And it was incredible, because when they get married, when they become nuns, they get a wedding ring. And at first there's like, 1 year is bhaktin, 2 years is this. And I think it's after maybe 7 years, then you're allowed to take the final vows like that. And anytime you can leave like that, but you say, okay, you got the vocation. Then they get the wedding ring. And then they're married to Christ. It's a little bit confusing whether Christ is God or God is Christ. That's a little bit in their tradition like that. And it was very intense, you know, the whole interview like that. Because they've been doing this for like, you know, 50 years or something like that, you know. And then more than that, what is it, maybe for 35 years? And they were talking about the austerities involved and the mind and surrendering. And she asked them about different religions. And they said, well, use your sense. If you're trying to serve God and you're trying to serve him through your fellow man as your brother and sister, that's all that's necessary. Like that. Okay. It's like very clear, like practical understanding like that. And then they asked her, they were talking about, what is it? Is it true that men have more access to God than women? They're kind of looking at each other and smiling. And they said, who was the first person Jesus revealed himself to after he was crucified? He said, well, Mary, yeah, a woman. Yeah. So they had these like citations. Jesus was saying, come on, John, come on, Peter, come on, everybody, follow me. See, why didn't he tell the women to follow him? He said, well, I don't know, because they already were following him. They didn't have to be called. They just got up and followed like that. So very, they had these really strong realizations about, he said, we're very happy to be women in a religion like that. Very mature. Actually, it'd be nice to have more and more interviews like that, because they were very happy to talk to her why she was wearing a sari and what was our standard, and they thought it was very nice. What you're doing is very nice, And then they were talking finally about one of the sisters, and after all these years, and she died about a year ago, and they were talking about how they put her there for the grave, and they put the hands like this, victory, like that, I won, And very intense, And they started quoting from the Song of Solomon, which is all in Madhurya Ras about, it's very conjugal. It's the first, very first off, it says, kiss me with the kiss of your lips. That's how it starts, like that. Saint Bernard is very nice. Saint Bernard de Clairvaux, interesting guy. He wrote a whole commentary on the Song of Solomon. and it starts off, he says, okay, I assume you've already read Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, because by these two you become free from the temptations of the flesh and the temptations of speculation. And now you're ready to hear about these things, about these higher relations. But we're not going to talk about kissing God's lips to start with. Forget it. We're going to talk about kissing his feet. Get down, Baba. This is a sinner who comes and he realizes, my master has come and saved me, and he's risked his life to save me, and you go crying, you kiss his feet and say, thank you, thank you, thank you, like that. I don't deserve this. So once you get that kiss, then you start to be engaged in service with Sambandha Abhideya. And you become a responsible person who can be trusted. And then you say, okay, now I'm going to give you this service. I want you to go and do this and that. And you take his hand and say, thank you very much, So then finally, he doesn't go into details, but this intimate relationship. He talks about it being a reality. Different people have experienced this, and maybe even himself, these feelings, intimate feelings. So I've 7 sermons, I've read the first couple. He says, but you may say, it is blasphemous to talk about God having hands, feet. God is one pure, undivided spiritual substance. Like that. So he deals with this, He said, but, yeah, it says the world is his footstool, and he gives quotations that he has to have some kind of, gross form to deal with this world, So very, you can see in the Christian tradition had all this stuff, but they lost it, And they didn't appear devotee, I think, so they got confused here and there and different things like that. But in Christian tradition, there's so much. It's not, we're giving them anything like weird. It's just, look at your own acharyas. So St. Bernard's a very nice, his lecture like that. I get that from different people. You're investigating a little bit. You see how much it works, too. How much you can actually contact people and communicate. I gave Tathamaneel. I'm buying up all the 2-volume Krishna books, the big ones. They're almost out of print again, like that. Whenever I see them, I buy them. That's why I got my... I have about 14 of those, locked up. So I gave him a set like that, And he was, was impressed. Ooh, it's like that, And he was, while we were talking, he was like looking like that. He was talking like that. He was looking, reading, So very, Prabhupada says even a dog can take part, right? In the Sankirtan movement and dance, So we find some of you can do like that. Ring the bell, right? Like that. So very, every year it's been going up like that. And this year everybody said it was a lot of work too, to organize it. Hari Lila from Texas is on our board of directors. He's like a big engineer. And he's retired now. His wife's husband's father owns several big hotels there. So he gave us like 5 free rooms in a 5-star hotel, 4-star, with sauna, everything for free. And then, Sasha was staying there with Mrs. Sasha and Tamahar and Radhika and some friends he brought, from William and Mary, from the college like that. And before our interfaith dialogue, we had like an education meeting like that. We just, many people there. It was very useful like that, about talking about the ideas about the higher. Sasha's basic idea is, I don't want to make it too strict. Everybody should develop their own programs, but there should be some kind of standard thing, that what it means. If you're bhakti bhai bhava, it means a certain standard thing like that. But other than that, everybody else should develop their own programs in terms of content and method like that. So it was a very, livable idea like that. And in the 24-hour kirtan, we finished out. Devotees came from Atlanta, Balabhadra. Yeah, it was really great. No, everybody's dancing, Jewish guys, everybody dancing. First they said, oh, no, like that, no. Then they were pulling a little bit, they finally got in, and just, okay, then they got it, they started, really, it was just right away, they were just dancing, like chanting, like that, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The Presbyterian guy, the Catholic guy, the Jewish guy, the Muslim guy, he was interesting. He's from Pakistan, Amir Aryan. So marriage was very, it was really nice, it was just, very clear. He had nice citations from the Quran, and basically, there's no scope for celibacy in the Muslim tradition. The way he's presenting it, you've got to be married. You need a quotation where Muhammad said, "Peace be upon him." If you're not married, you're not our man, like that. So I mean, there's obvious flaw in this because everybody's supposed to be married, and every woman's supposed to have about four or five kids, right? That's kind of the Muslim idea, I think. And therefore, after a very short time, right, I'm going to have a problem. Your idea is everybody should be Muslim, right? Yeah, and every woman should have four children. Yeah, okay. So it's like very obviously we're going to have like a problem here, a population like that, And but I never got a chance to ask him that. And then what else? The Jewish thing was also pretty much no celibacy. I mean, almost just like an injunction almost like that. That's why, And so, but on the other hand, the Presbyterian guy and I were both brahmacharis, So it was like, it was interesting like that, presenting the positions. We're talking about what a nice life it is, an opportunity to serve God with more concentration. That was very good. And then Muslim tradition also is that basically the wife should be chaste. And if she's not chaste, we'll stone her to death. That was just like very clear. You got your husband. And the husband should go to work and pay the bills like that. So it's very, as you can see how it's like, it could spread very easily because this is very clear. I stay home, I take care of the house, I'm a chaste girl, I can have kids, my house, my family, I don't have to worry about the economics. My husband goes out and makes the money, like that and stuff like that. And then, and also there was, how's it go? I think divorce was also permitted, but they said it was really, even Muhammad was saying it's permitted, but it's just forget it, it's not nice, In the Jewish tradition, you're saying there's no vow. Until death would we part. But he was saying that there's things you sign beforehand when you get married in Jewish tradition, which says that if we separate, then the husband owes the wife a god, cosmonical amount of money with interest for the number of years married. So before you get divorced, you think, oh my God, divorce is going to cost me $147,000. Better just to tolerate it like that, like that. Yeah. So very interesting, the different traditions. But the whole point was how does it promote, self-realization? How does it promote these higher things like that? And so now we're going to publish the, I have some copies with me. I can leave here. The first paper was submitted. I'm going to edit maybe two, three more in like that. So that's what we're trying to do. We went to Boise then. And then we met Professor Bueller, who was head of the Department of History for 10 years there. He retired, but they didn't want him to, but he retired because he wanted to do 2 years as a professor without having the burden. And very friendly, very nice. And the same thing, too, we were talking about these people, and he was very satisfied that we had like this broad neos, this broader idea. And he wanted to do his studies on India, his PhD thesis, but he lost his fellowship, and so he did it on Africa instead. But he's very, again, he wants to work with us. Actually, anybody I meet now is say, tell me some good books. Because we have a book, our website is bhati.org, not bhakti, bhati. So you go there, there's a book classical bookshelf, and we're starting to collect books with links, or else the direct download. Imitation of Christ is the second biggest book after the Bible, selling book, and really good. It's for ashram, grihastha and brahmachari, but it really is strong. You read it just like, do you think you're going to escape the punishment of God? It's like, wow, it's like, nobody else will be there but you and all the things you've done and thought and, now you're preaching and, with a high heart you're like this and that. God will see it all. It's like, ooh. It's a very good thing. Nice. You see why it's so popular. It's a very good document. And then And then because of our attachment, I also have a discussion of detective novels as classical literature. Right? You know, who's the biggest selling author in the history of the world? Huh? Agatha Christie. Yeah. Have you read any of her books? Yeah, she's read them. Yeah. Okay, like that. Yeah. So she's writing after World War II. Another one is, of course, famous as Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes. So before World War I, and then G.K. Chesterton. He was writing a little bit later. His famous thing is Father Brown. Yeah, you read those?
Huh? Again, I've seen some of the movies.
Yeah, like that.
He
became a Catholic in the end like that. He was arguing with George Bernard Shaw about atheism. In the end, he became a Catholic. So Father Brown's this guy getting involved in these like crimes and stuff like that. But every now and again, he just pops in with this real strict, strong religious perspective and stuff like that, you know. And in general, like that, religious, you know. So anyway, okay, if you got this, that's what we're there for. If you got this attachment, maybe some people have this attachment, reading stuff. Okay, read the first Sherlock Holmes book, read the first Agatha Christie, and then read Father Brown, and you see, it gives you a very good view of English history, who they are and how they develop like that. You know, I can see there's always been a very strong conflict between the working class and the upper class in England. You know, I don't know how it is now, but even still there's, you know, class thing there. Then Wukong is the big Chinese classic, Journey to the West. They go from India, China, to India to look for higher knowledge, like that. So for them, it's a journey to the West, like that. It's just even now, there are movies and stuff based on it, like that. Amapati Swami would say, Mars, why are you reading all this stuff like that, you know? And his servant's this big Buddhist guy from China, very big, powerful guy, said, no, Maharaj, if you know Wukong, you know Chinese people. What's the biggest sin you can commit in Chinese culture? Huh? You don't know. How are you going to preach there?
Huh?
Drive a car. Yeah. Traditionally, it's for traditionally. Yeah.
To disrespect your parents, your ancestors.
Yeah. To not take care of your father and mother. Yeah. It's the worst thing you can do like that. So very, America is like one of the first things you should do, right? send them off to the convalescent home as soon as you can. Get out of the house as soon as you can. In most cultures, if the children grow up and leave home, it's a great embarrassment to the family. You know, they left. But in our culture, if they stay home, people think that there's some kind of emotional problem there. Or like, you know, they're weird, you know. He's 22 years old and he's still living at home. Like that. Wow, you know. And now he and his wife got married and they're living in the same house. Wow, weird. What do they do? Like, you know? So very different view. And when you respect your parents, then right away, you can get a closer idea of God like that and stuff, you know, like that. So that's kind of something we're doing, Sankirtan. So Prabhupada's saying here, so many speculative philosophers, but they don't understand all these things, right? Who is Krishna? What to speak of them? They understand something, you know. But then finally, if by this process we become purified, even still we don't understand Krishna. Predominating philosophy is science, according to Prabhupada's idea. What does the word science mean? Huh? No, in English. Science, conscience, reminiscence. Means to know. That's all it means. It means to know. So they're jnanis. Their whole approach is like that. You know? And their idea is to know how the universe is created, what is the cause of everything. But our point is, no, you can never know. You know, you never will. It's always greater than you extend. But you can know it in terms of your particular position like that. You can fully satisfy everything you need to know like that. You know? Does Mother Yashoda know that Krishna goes out at night and dances with girls? No. You tell her that, she'll probably poke you in the nose. Wham! Like that. You know, yeah. So we have to, in terms of our position, that's what we know. And so the internal potency is arranging all this stuff so everybody, you know, knows what they need to know. And that's not the game. The game is bhakti, like that. So these girls, they all thought that Krishna was under their control. But did they want to exploit him? You know, if a wife controls her husband in this world, she wants to exploit him, work hard. Krishnananda, remember him? Krishnananda. He was a big German devotee. He came back to the temple in Berkeley. Remember? Yeah. A big German guy, you know. And his wife tried to stab him to death to get the insurance policy. So that's when he left and became a devotee again. So Mother Uma, she's one of Hansa Dutta's disciples from Germany. So Radha Govinda, this brahmachari, is thinking about getting married, you know. And she's telling me, she said, Prabhu, I want to tell you something. You know, I know women. I used to be one. And a woman's only interested in one thing, how much she can make that man work for her. Like that. So I was married, and I worked that man until he dropped. And then I climbed up on his head, and I was looking for the next one. Like that. I climbed up on his head and looking for the next one like that. You know? So the materialistic life, everybody wants to exploit everybody else. How much can this woman gratify my senses? Like that. How much can this guy gratify my senses? But the queens of Dwarka have no idea about that. Why do they want to control Krishna? They think Krishna's under their control, right? What for? Why do they want to control Krishna? Mr. McCabe nod. What do you think? Why do they want to control Krishna? Seriously, they want to control him. For Krishna's satisfaction, right? They're thinking this is Madhurya Rasa is so intense, they say, you know, I'm going to wear this. No, Prabhu, you should wear this. Okay, well, if you say so. Because they think, oh, he'll be better, he'll look nicer, he'll be happier. And that's why it says that Mother Sita brought Lord Ram completely under her control, because he could see she loves me. She loves me more than I love myself. Right? So therefore, whatever she tells me to do, I know, you know, it's coming out of love, you know. And maybe, oh, there's something I got to adjust it like this and that because she's my wife and, you know, this and that. But, you know, so this is the point, is that the verse here, some flowers there. The simple and delicate women thought that Lord Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. So it's a strong contrast why the atheists are unaware and why they were unaware. But they, you know, they thought he dominated them, like they were dominating him like that. But they would never, you know, think of, you know, his father's thing from their mind about sense gratification. Shantaras is detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna, you know. So in the queens of Dwarka, Shantaras is unlimitedly intense. You know, each one becomes more intense. When it becomes intense enough, it becomes service. More intense, it becomes fraternity. More intense, it becomes parental. More intense, it becomes, you know, conjugal like that. So there's nobody who's more in Shantaras than the queens in Dwarka, like that. You know? Yeah. So,
just a point about Krishna enjoying the being controlled.
Yeah.
That Kaviraj Goswami points out. Actually, he's speaking in the voice of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how the Krishna enjoys rebukes that he gets from his consorts who approach him in a sulky mood or prevent him from entering.
Throw flower garlands at him.
More than he likes the hymns of the Vedas.
Yeah.
In fact, that, to him, that's boring.
Yeah.
But his interaction with his devotees,
shooting arrows at him.
Climbs on his back and wrestles him to the ground, and then he actually feels happiness.
Yeah. And Sudan, Bhishmadev shooting arrows at him, with blood coming out like that.
Yeah.
This is a way to live. Wow. Yeah. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
In the same verse that you read.
Yeah. Behind you there.
These transcendental wives were unaware of the glories of the Lord. Uh-huh. And it gives an analogy, a comparison to atheists, just like atheists don't know. Why would that? Because these are transcendental wives of the Lord. Wouldn't they know about the Lord?
They, again, as I mentioned before, that when he shows the universal form, he says, Hanta, I'll show it to you, buddy. But it's something, it's just almost an embarrassment for Krishna to show how he's the super soul. You know, I'm going to give the example, like somebody was, you know, part of Zardi or something, was killing people in Iraq, and you ask him about these things, and how do you do it? How do you? He says, it's like it's almost an embarrassment for him to talk about this in our relationships, you know. So they know higher glories of the Lord. Krishna has, what, 64 qualities? We have 64 qualities. He's an expert linguist. He's an expert judge of time and place. He's very, very respectful to old people. So many expert dresser. So that, you know, those things aren't manifest in the universal form like that. But in terms of social things, you realize, you know, it's somebody, one businessman was challenging Prabhupada about the Hare Krishna movement and was it just this and that. Then Prabhupada said, okay, Setji, you're a businessman. I went to America with, like, you know, was it with 100 rupees or whatever it was, $25. And then, like, whatever it was, like, you know, 10 years later, I'm a millionaire in every currency in the world. Is that a miracle? The guy's a businessman. He's stopping there and thinking. And finally he says, yes, Prabhupada, that's a miracle. Doesn't matter how good you are as a businessman. Within 10 years, you can't go from $10 to $1 million in every currency in the world. So in his own way, he was convinced that, wow, I'm dealing with God as a businessman. Man in the prosecution of his own duty can realize the supreme transcendence, chapter 18. So that's how people approach. In the beginning, yeah, everybody approaches Krishna consciousness from their karma, and they begin to appreciate the value. But as we go on from our swadharma, you know, from our intrinsic nature, whatever it is, because we're friends, whatever, then we realize, you know, the Krishna, wow, you know, it's like, what was it, Rukmini Dwarkadish? Sometime they had like these professional clothing designers make an outfit for them, I mean two or three outfits, and they designed clothes for all these big movie stars and stuff. And then they put a picture of Rukmini Dwarkadish right in their lobby like that, dressed like that. It's kind of like, you know, a sample of what we can do. And they were all commenting. They were just like, this wasn't like anything else we did before. You know, we're all asking about things, and they were developing knowledge, and they said it was just like, it was just different, like, you know. So they're clothes designers. And they realized the glories of Krishna. So they knew his glories, but higher glories. His glories in terms of the controlling material world is like, you know, it's almost embarrassing, you know, like that.
The other question is about atheists. It refers to atheists here, yeah, and you have also been talking about different religions and views, and the other day on Wednesday you mentioned about Dawson, and delusion about God.
Yeah.
So the question is this, what do the atheists believe is the higher purpose of life?
Oh, well, I have a whole PowerPoint show here right now. it's terrifying. Because we have some citations from, actually, Gopal Hari, Radhika's brother, did the PowerPoint show. He's traveling in South America. So I suggested, why don't you look at Newton as a theologian? And he got this really nice show. So there are many books published by Carl Sagan, Dawkins, several like that. And Dawkins is so extreme as an atheist, a materialist, that he even embarrasses his followers. Actually, what's happening is they're starting to give a man enough rope to hang himself. They're starting to like, because they're losing their position. So now they're starting to publish so many things about how materialism is correct and stuff like that. They're really giving so many funny jokes and stuff, cartoons and stuff about it. Yeah. So I can't remember exactly, but it says something like, he said, the more we investigate the universe, the more we discover that it has no design, no purpose, no mercy, no beauty, simply a blind, indolent indifference. We're born, we live, and we die. They don't believe in anything. I mean, it's just, there's a book called The Selfish Gene by, what's the guy's name, Wilson? Wilson.
Selfish Gene was Dawkins.
Okay, but the other one was before that. Sociobiology. So his idea was that even all altruistic behavior is something which evolved like that, you know, like that. So which is kind of weird in how you help other people rather than. So I got his book from the library, public library in San Francisco, and I was turning the pages, and it was like all these pictures of horses and tigers fighting for meat, fighting for women, like that. It was like this thing, meat, women. It was like pictures, really, like, you know, wow, you know. But it was like smoking. It was like a strange smell, you know. And finally I realized what it was the smell of tobacco. The person reading the book had been like, had been blowing the thing. And I was realizing that's the only way you could possibly support the thing is you got to make yourself so stupid that you can ignore the obvious thing like that, you know. I mean, we don't, you don't really see this, like men, you know, men going around like, you know, killing each other for meat and women like that. I mean, it's, you know, well, it's, yeah, it's evolved. It's higher, subtler sensitivities have evolved out of this, you know, looking for meat and women like that. And it's just, Prabhupada says it basically, it's more difficult to be an atheist than it is to be a devotee. For the soul, it can do either one, but the soul has to really work, actually practically speaking, to maintain this position, because this is unnatural. You see, even tigers, you know, lions, they play. They're so gentle with their cubs, you know, the adults, they play with each other. I mean, at one time, lionesses. We were very intelligent. One was flushing the deer to run, and they're running right to where her friend is waiting to catch one of them and kill them. You know, they're intelligent. But they missed their kill, and they kind of went up each other. Then, you know, you could tell she was kind of like batting at her friend for not catching somebody. It was kind of a friendly, like, hey, you know, anything like that, come on. And then they kind of played for a while, biting each other, you know, mildly like that. Okay, let's go hunt some more. But a very, very like social, playful, you know, in psychology, even play is one of the biggest motivations in animals like that. So they play so much. There's a lot of animals like that. Yeah, very, animals can appreciate a joke. Like that, yeah, yeah. One time we saw this goat was sitting there in Vrindavan. This monkey was sitting there, little monkey. The monkey reaches over and pulls one hair out of the goat's tail like that. You know, the goat looks around like that, and the monkey looks away like that. You know, it's really intentional. And did it again. The goat looks around. The monkey's like looking like that. You know, and then the third time he did, the goat just got up and ran away like that. Some ghost was after him or something like that. And the monkey just laughed. He was like rolling on the ground like that. You know, it was just like. And they knew that, you know, they were. Another time, the boys were walking down. Vamanajan, remember him? They were walking down from this property down to the road. It was somewhere on the coast here. And this big German shepherd, the neighbors had, came out like out of the bushes, like, rah! And they thought they were sure, God, we're going to die. And it was like that. And then he kind of was laughing. He could kind of like, you know, like this, like, you know, kind of like, you know, definitely like I was just playing like that, you know. He's like, you know. And then he walked along with them like that, you know. But he came out just like this whole thing, like intentionally, like to scare them. You know? So that's the only way they can do it. They have no heart. They start to get into it. Like some of them, we talk about Brahman, that in the end, you know, you and I will go and everything else, but science will develop all and forever. Its beauty and knowledge will increase without limits. The University of California? No, it's Fiat Lux. But may knowledge increase without limit. I think it's Nashville. Yeah, let there be light. Brahman. But what's the one? Nashville. Vanderbilt, their thing is may knowledge increase more and more. So many times that's their thing, just that knowledge is self-satisfying, knowing more and more and more and more and more. Right? That's Einstein said it's those moments when you see the symmetry and the beauty in nature. That's what drives you to do this hard work. Other people too. There's a Nobel conference on aesthetics somewhere on the East Coast, and they say this. Many of them, they talk about these beauties and things like that. That's why they became scientists. You know? But because it's Brahman, they lose it. Without Bhagavan, they can't keep it, and they become confused. Isn't Georgi? Yeah. I think it was his acceptance speech, Nobel laureate. I guess finish here. I became a scientist because I wanted to know what is life as a young man. And so I've gotten so many projects, I've got so many prizes, I've directed other people to do their work. But now at the end of my life, I'm left with nothing but atoms and molecules, which are devoid of all life whatsoever. So now in my old age, I'm forced to retrace my steps and find where life slipped through my fingers. Very poignant. And many scientists are coming to that point. I mean, the generation, that they'd started with these high ideals. You know, was another guy too, Nobel laureate. Also genetics, can't remember his name. But same thing too, so we all join. No, he was in Europe. Same thing, same area. We worked with them a little bit. But same thing. He said, well, me and my colleagues, we all became, because we wanted to see what is life, what is beauty. We thought, now we have a tool. He said, now it's just, you give a scientist long-term funding, an interesting problem, he'll work for anybody. If he's developing horrible, ghastly biological weapons to kill people by the thousands, he'll do it. And there's this point like that. And it's, now you're just like, it's just a job. You want something interesting, some money. It was very, you know, kind of, but so that's why it was happening now in Oxford. Big debate going on, you know, big debate. And they was it McGrath and Dawkins, they cross each other on the campus and they go, McGrath, Dawkins. So it's like, you know, they kind of, they're debating. When they see each other, they kind of like, you know, they nod like that, you know, so on. It's a very in-house discussion. What is science? And see, in many ways, the conclusion is coming to the fact that science is okay. It was designed to answer a certain kind of questions like that, right? But unless it has respect and good guidance from sociology, ethics, morality, theology, history, then it's not going to be nice. It won't be fruitful. It'll become more and more boring like that. It has to be some higher inspiration. So it seems like maybe that's going to be the conclusion of the debate, and that's okay, because then everybody else starts to fall in position. And the theologians, they didn't have the arguments they have now. And almost you can see that they're like our arguments coming from our tradition, and now they're dealing very nicely with these points like that. Before they didn't have these. So you can see Prabhupada, it's just, because you know, there's so many devotees there now doing their doctorates. You know, so many have come through, and they, of course, they're introducing the ideas. And forget the source, it's just the idea itself is like, you can say, oh, that's a nice way to look at it. You know? So Prabhupada's like a big rock, you know, fell in the water. Now all these waves, you know, like that, you know, they're just going out in every area like that.
So, yeah. I just wanted to say this, that if Zen Georgi came to the conclusion that atoms and molecules are not life at the end of his life, now what that says is that body is not life. And then there is a possibility of asking what life is, and they could understand the soul and higher force there.
First you have to convince them that matter is insufficient to explain everything. Somebody, okay, they come to that, you know. So then you have to explain the transcendental element called Atma. Oh, Atma, like that. It has will. It's outside the time factor, like that. So then finally you have to bring in the idea of Paramatma and Jivatma. Instead, if you do that, stop. So that's the. In the university, you don't go beyond that because the way they're set up. And then and individually, personally, if they want to talk to you about Bhagavan, okay. I specifically remember one time we were invited to give a lecture at a big university, and it was Department of, I forget what it was, I mean, it was some science department. So I went to see the professor, and he said, well, you know, the dean wants to talk to you before we go and give the lecture. And I could see he was getting some heat for inviting us religious guys there. So we went in and saw the dean. The dean's looking at us and we're asking, and okay, you know, we kind of passed the first test. We're not going to do anything too weird like that, you know, and the professor was a lot relieved. So I went there. I was giving the lecture. It was maybe like about 200 students. And I was talking about Sankhya, different levels and stuff like that, you know. And the dean was there with one lady, looked like, you know, the head, and they were sitting in the back, like, you know, watching the whole thing, and the professor was in the front, kind of like, like that. But it was very good, and they actually were, because Sankhya gives a very nice explanation of all the way from, you know, the Purusha on down like that to the elements and stuff. And from my background, everybody take your background, I can explain it well in terms of Carl Jung, E.T. Hall, all these big people on perception. And so the world we see is based upon the mind. There are no microphones. This is just sense perception. And the body organizes it, the whole side trip. But this, you can see the mind produces the world. You know? So then, and finally, then somebody asked me, well, you know, questions. He asked me, well, what's your particular religion and this and that and stuff like that? And I said, well, you know, it's, of course, I obviously have some background. Many people hear me also, their own traditions like that. But and if you afterwards you want to talk about it, I'd be very happy to talk to you about it. But that's, you know, not the subject of today's lecture like that so much. I was kind of watching this dean and this lady out of the corner of my eye, and you could see them both going like, you know. you know, exactly. Ah, okay, he knows how to play the game. Okay. Perfect. Now we're happy, you know. Because they themselves, afterwards, that's exactly what Prabhupada said. You know, afterwards, yeah, they start talking to you, you know. But that's, Rabindra Swarup said, you see two people playing tennis. Some guy from the jungle sees a game of tennis and he says, hey, guys, come here. Now, come here, guys. You say, what is it? You know, if you take the net down, it'll be a lot easier. And then they say, chase you away with the tennis rackets, you know. But there's, everybody has their game, right? like on the street, there's a certain, you know, game which you can be approach people, and that you just don't act that way. They're like, okay, you can act that way and stuff, and certain, they reciprocate a certain way. Okay, you know. So there's certain rules in every community like that. And it's more basic. Really, preaching is personal, making a personal relationship ultimately. And so you got to understand what the personal rules are, who the personal authorities are, who's respected, like that. And then you begin to know that area. Yeah. Become, as I said, become self-realized, build your character, and preach. Okay. So, Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna mantra ki. Thank you all very much. Back home.
We have a few minutes, actually.
In Bhagavad Gita, it is said the Brahman is the definition of Brahman. Brahman, in each chapter, Arjun says, what is Brahman? Yeah. So Krishna says, the living entity is Brahman. So I'm getting confused. Sometimes we say Brahman is light, and then sometimes we say it's a living entity. So what is the right way to understand?
Mahabrahmad, Mahayonir, like that. It also says that, what is it, chapter 13? Mahabrahmad, Mahayonir. Yeah. But then Brahman there, it means the total material elements. The total material manifestation is called Brahman, Prabhupada says. So my understanding is just like the Amara Kosh, what else is there? The Nirukti is more. These are like two Vedic dictionaries. They go with the Vedas. And so Atma means the endeavor, the mind, or the self, Atma. And so then Brahman, I think, also has this variety of meanings like that. You know, like that. You talk about in Krishna tradition, you talk about the Holy Spirit, like that, spiritual. The word spirit is the word respiration. It means breath, prana. And so, yeah, at one level, people appreciate the absolute truth as air, prana. You know, I mean, okay, if you can't breathe, you're not worried about what you're going to eat, whether it's hot or cold, like that. No, you know, everything is just what I'm going to drink or not. That point is just, you know, air is supreme. Many people can live 3 weeks without food. Some can live 3 days without water, but very few people can live 3 minutes without air. Yeah, so that's appreciation. So that's different levels. So Brahman, as far as I understand it, has, you know, different definitions according to the context, like that. I think Prabhupada says it means also that which expands unlimitedly. Brahman is that which is all expansive, like that. Yeah.
Queens in Dwarka, they are most established in Chandras. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to understand how in Brihad Bhagavatam there's an episode where Krishna and Satyabhama, I think, and Krishna wanted to go to Vrindavan back.
Yeah.
And Satyabhama was like asking some question, like how much Nand Maharaj and Yashoda Mother, you know, gave you, how much we'll send the money and something.
Oh, yeah.
And that displeased Krishna something. So, and how is the relative position of like Uddhava and Satyabhama? Like, seems like Uddhava is more close to Krishna.
Oh.
So my question, how to understand the role of Satyabhama?
Satyabhama. In, two dramas by Rupa Goswami. Upadeshamrita is a summary. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a complete science. And the two dramas, Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, are a demonstration of all these mellows and like that. Which one is about Krishna and Vrindavan? Yeah, because the V's match. Vidagdha, Vrindavan. So Lalita Madhava, Krishna has left Vrindavan, And everybody starts to disappear. All the gopis start disappearing. And Radharani is going to kill herself. And Lalita and Vishakha say, well, don't kill yourself. Listen, I think I hear a flute at Bhangsivat. Let's go there. So she runs ahead, and she's faster than they are. And they get there. She's not there. And the waves are rippling, and her footprints go, and the sun's shining. And they go, she drowned herself in the Jamuna, you know. So Radharani disappears. Chandravali disappears. Chandravali. They all disappear. Meanwhile, in Dwarka, Krishna's there, you know, trying to satisfy his father and mother and people in different rasas and so on. And then it becomes, Krishna's already married Rukmini, and then the news becomes that, oh, Krishna won Satyabhama, you know, and then in the Santaka, because of the Santaka jewel. So she's coming, and all of Rukmini's friends are wondering what she's like, you know, like, you know, this new girl's coming, and they're hanging over the fence trying to see her when she gets out of the palanquin and like that. And they go to her room when she arrives, and they say, oh, sister, welcome to Dwarka. So nice to meet you, and blah, 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 blah. We have to go now. And they go out. And the second they're out, they say, she has to leave today. Krishna can't even see her. Rukmini hasn't got a chance against her. Let her go. You know. So they're followers of Rukmini. So then Krishna and Rukmini, Satyabhama, was walking in the garden, and they say, well, hello, who are you? I'm the daughter of Satrajit. Oh, I'm the daughter of Vasudev. And, oh, do you like chocolate ice cream? Oh, I love chocolate ice cream. And so they just develop this intense feelings and everything else. And then Rukmini walks in and sees them together, and they can separate like that. And Rukmini says, oh, you met Satyabhama. And Krishna says, oh, you're Satyabhama? How nice to meet you like that. Oh, you're, you know. Yeah. And then, but there was a parrot there, and he heard everything. So in Krishna Lila, you don't have iPods, you have parrots. And they can memorize stuff, and you can prompt them to chant everything you want to do. You give them grapes and stuff, they chant the Brahma Samhita like that, you know. So then this parrot starts just reciting what he just heard like that, you know, about Krishna and Satyabhama talking, and Rukmini's listening like that, and then Krishna's trying to shut him up like that, you know. Shut up. You know, and he takes him and giving him grapes. And say more. You know, so he's describing this. And then Krishna's saying, well, it's not like that. I didn't mean that. Then he says something which Rukmini understands is like amongst the stars, you're like the moon, my love for you, amongst girls. And Satyabhama can take it as amongst the stars, you're like the moon. And Purnamasi can take it as, I think it's a full moon day today. So it's like translating this as a whole adventure. But it's just, it took him like 15 years to write it. I think these two dramas, 17 years. And so it's like, you know, it's really intense, you know, complicated things. And finally, Rukmini is convinced that Krishna loves Satyabhama more than her. And so in her, it was a Vama Swabhama, whatever it is, in her right wing, you know, temperament, she runs out crying, you know, ah, you know. And then Krishna's going to run after her and just pacify her, looks back at Satyabhama, and she's looking at him like that, looks at her, and it's just like, okay. Okay, so it's decided that Satyabhama can't marry Krishna. She has to leave, so she can't tolerate that. So she's going to go drown herself in the river and kill herself. Then at just that moment, Purnamasi comes out of the sky in a basket. Like that. Machina. It says, wait a minute, hold everything. Like that, you know. How did I tell you? Actually, when Radharani disappeared into the sun, you know, the sun god took her up like that. And so Satyajit got two jewels, the Samtaka jewel and Satyabhama. So Satyabhama is actually, some say, incarnation of Radharani, and some say Radharani, like that. And then Chandravali is Rukmini. Yeah. And so they start finding all the gopis one by one. Hey, so-and-so's here. Oh, so-and-so's here. And they can't find Jamba. I can't find, I think it's Vishakha or somebody. And finally, Jamba Bhatti comes padding along the ground. Ah, Vishakha. And they all remember who they are. And then Rukmini says, well, of course, my sister. And they're so happy to meet each other. They love each other so much, you know. Chandravali and Radha. So Rukmini and Satyabhama, they're reconciled and so happy to meet each other. He says, oh, Koko, of course, you have to be married to Krishna. How can you not be married to Krishna like that? But you have to share him with us like that. And Satyabhama says, no, no, he's actually your husband. You're sharing him with me. No, no, you're, you know. So that's kind of the, I understand that he talks about it, explains that their consciousness and position like that. So it has, you know, different kinds of relationships like that. So she's Radharani, You know, but in Dwarka, her humor is not prominent. In Dwarka, Chandavali's humor is prominent, like that. Yeah?
And how do you understand those comments by Satyavan when Krishna was going to Vrindavan?
Oh.
So, Satyavan was...
Oh, because she's you know, oh yeah, then Krishna chastises her and stuff like that. You don't know anything, you know. Because she knows, you know, that Krishna enjoys defending the Brijbasis like that. So she's like, what do they know? You know? So then Krishna will be like, you know, fired up and chastise her like that, you know. Yeah, because she's happy to see Krishna. By the time they all go there, and Radharani understands that if she bathes in this one place in Dwarka, she'll get Krishna again. So she goes to bathe there. And then all the queens come out, all the gopis surround the place with cloth and protect her bathing. Krishna's going to take his bath. So we should go bathe this place today because he knows she'll be there. So then all the big kshatriyas come there and they try to chase these cowherd girls away, but they just look at them. And these guys are like, you know, incapacitated by the glances of these cowherd girls, big kshatriyas, Abhimanyu. So then they're waiting, and then finally then Radharani comes out. And then all the queens of Dwarka have been saying, well, what are they? They can't play crossword puzzles. They don't know how to do this and that, you know, and everything else and so on. But they look at Radharani, and she's looking at Krishna, and is about to explode, literally, just in front of their eye. It's like, you know, like that, and so on. So they just pass out in his consciousness like that, you know. Wow, how can we ever hope to, you know. So it's always just Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he couldn't give enough details. Madhurya Ras. So he wrote, Rupa Goswami wrote Ujjwala Nilamani. He says that. Ujjwala Nilamani is where he then goes into the details of different conjugal divisions in terms of these feelings and stuff like that. Like that, you know. So her whole purpose is to, you know, because they somehow know Krishna loves the Brijbasis. They're not opposed to that, but it's just like incomprehensible to them, like that. Myself, I hear Parthasarathi, you know, okay, he was in Amsterdam, and what am I going to do today? Well, I'm going to go to all the smoke shops and sell books to all the tobacco shops. Yeah. So he sells 50 books in tobacco shops. That's what he told them, you know, stop smoking. Yeah. Take these books and go out of business. You know, it's like, but it says to me, it's like, you know, it's incomprehensible, you know, how somebody can do these things like that, you know. It's like Kunti. She's thinking about Yashoda, but she can appreciate it, but it's just incomprehensible to her, like how this can go on like that. You know? So in Dwarka, in that position, they can't, it's just but they know Krishna likes it, and so they're like, they're experimenting too. Well, why does he like it? How much does he like it and stuff? And if, you know, Krishna's attacking them or something, that's okay. It's part of conjugal love. Right. Okay. Okay, now? Stop now? Guy's German. What is your ancestor? You're French? Your ancestors are from what country? Czech. Huh? Czech. Czech, okay. Not German, almost German. Czechs are like German. On time. Just saying, Germans are... If I was told in Germany I had a signed rose for Japa in the temple, everybody was assigned a row for their Japa. So they would walk back and forth like that. Yeah. Yeah. Now it is time for book distribution. We go. Okay, they're stopping. You know, you know, in the middle of the sale. Put up, I'm sorry, I can't sell you this book. It's time to stop. You know, like yeah. Prithu gave a famous lecture. Yes, lecture, right? Prithu gave his lecture. He said, we are all Srila Prabhupada's dogs. Like that. And where do the dogs belong? In the street. So we should be out there in the street like dogs. You know? And it's like, really? And all the German guy says, ah, very nice. Lecture, you know. I feel inspired, you know. Go out and bark. And bark for Srila Prabhupada. That's another question. Or,
yeah. In fifth chapter, Krishna says renunciation of work and work devotion are both equal. Yeah. So, is there anything called renunciation of work?
Yeah, just sit down and do nothing.
But, I mean, why then... of course, Krishna says that work and devotion is better than renunciation of work.
Yeah.
But it seems like at least it is closer to... renunciation of work is closer to work of devotion. It means there are some people...
On the one hand is ugra karma, v-karma, just do any old damn thing to get what you want. Okay, Duryodhana maybe is like that. In the end, he accepts that. And Arjuna is a karmi in the beginning. right? He deserves this revenge. Ooh, nothing sweeter than revenge. Ooh, now he has a chance. And Bhima's even more enthusiastic. He's like looking at his watch, you know. Yeah. And so that's the beginning. They're going to enjoy. Ooh, wow, we're going to enjoy finally. At the end, I'm going to... When they tried to rape Draupadi, Prabhupada says the only solution for her, if they had been successful, was to commit suicide. If they'd been successful in denuding her in public, the only thing she could have done was to kill herself, you know, to maintain her honor. It's terrible, you know. I mean, if you saw some girl screaming out front, looks like a nice girl, and some guys, three guys trying to take her clothes off, you know, nobody here who wouldn't try and stop it. It was like, you can't do this. No, you can't do this, you know. So it was terrible. So when she finally got freed and you're walking out like that, she undid her hair, right? So you just said, why are you undoing your hair, you know? It was only a widow who has her hair undone. She said, because I'm a widow. If I had a real husband, he would have protected me. And these are kshatriyas like that. So this was like, you know. And so Duryodhana was more afraid of her than he was afraid of anybody else, because everybody else, they knew they would forgive and forget their man. But she, you know, he said she would not be satisfied until he was dead, like that. And so, you know, Arjuna was thinking, okay, finally, I can go home at the end of this day and drop these crowns in front of Draupadi, and she'll tie her hair up and she'll say, thank you, Arjuna. Like that. So in the beginning, he's a Sukarmi, no? He wants to follow the rules to satisfy his woman, what it comes down to. So then Krishna plays the role of Madan Mohan and attracts him away from illusion, from Moha, Mohini, by showing him Drona and Bhishma. And he sees, wow, this is what karma means. Even to be a Karmi, you know, it means somebody else has got to suffer. That's what it means. So then he wants to be a jnani, renounce everything, walk away, but that's also not practical for him because he's not on that level. He's not ready for jnana. You know? So then finally Krishna suggests karma yoga, right? So yeah, better than being a karmi or vikarmi or a karmi is being a jnani, to just not become attached to these things, detached, you know. But it's still better than that is to be a karma yogi, like that. You know, so better than renunciation of work is work and devotion. But he says, but they're both good to a certain level. You know, like this is jnana, pretty much. It's analytical understanding of things, right? We understand everything. Oh, okay, yeah, awesome, yeah, properly. You know, but then the whole purpose though is to give us this opportunity, you know, to focus, okay, on Krishna. When the mind is pacified, you can chant your rounds, right? You know, do I have time to rotate my tires today? You know, you're finding, you know. See, no, you know. Your intelligence says, hey, everything's taken care of. Now is our time to chant japa. You can do it. So dhyana mishra bhakti yoga. Karma mishra bhakti yoga, jnana mishra bhakti yoga, dhyana mishra. And now you're really focusing on Krishna. Then you start to get real taste, you know. So then real bhakti yoga starts, right? You know, it's vasa, raganuga bhakti, vadi bhakti, bhava bhakti, like that. And he describes what you should do at different levels like that. Yeah? Okay, yeah.
Subject Bhagavad Gita itself.
Yeah.
When Srila Prabhupada explains the term karma yoga, he also uses the term buddhi yoga.
Yeah, or bhakti yoga. Yeah.
Bhakti yoga. Yeah, but buddhi yoga is also used, and it is sometimes used synonymously with karma yoga.
Yeah.
You have any comments on what buddhi yoga is meant to be?
I think buddhi yoga probably, he doesn't use it as karma yoga. He uses it as yoga. What's the word? Karma adhikaras te matpalaishu. I know enough to find it. It's about 247, no? Yeah. So you have a right to do your duty, your dharma as a kshatriya, but you have no right to be attached to the results. Yeah. And don't think that you're the cause of the results like that. So he gives them three things in terms of karma. And many people, many Indians, I know that they think that's the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita. I mean, one teacher said in their school they had this embroidered on their bags and stuff like that, that you should work without fruity results. Be intelligent. You know, Buddha said to say, every activity, don't be blindly involved in karma. That was Buddha's whole message. Be Buddhi. Stop and think about it. You should see the world from 2 inches behind your eyeballs. Do that. Yeah, so you can do it. You can actually step back, and otherwise your eyes are looking, you know, some Mother Divyavani, she's a big professor in South America. One time she was in a lecture program and we were giving there, and she said, all you guys, watch out, all you young students. These girls will catch you with your eyes like that. So watch where your eyes are going like that, you know. And you young ladies, you watch out. These guys will catch you with your ears. So these things are saying to you, you watch out. Very wise, you know. So yeah, the eyes are looking like that and stuff. And so if you back off and you watch the eyes watching, then solves a lot of problems like that. So that's Buddha's whole message is, there are many Buddhas, is to be come to the intellectual platform and like that, you know. And so he's like, that second chapter says that. It doesn't say do it for me. Matpara, one place before that, Krishna says Matpara, right, in the first, second chapter. But it's not very much. To me, the first time he really, this is in 330, Bhagavad Gita 330, Mayi Sarvani Karmani. And that's the whole thing with the first time. And karma there means dharma. It means kshatriya karma. So that's the first time he gives karma yoga. Before, it's just understand what the elements are, understand how they work dynamically, and don't get involved. Do your duty, do your dharma, without attachment to results. Yeah, like that. And so that's like Bodhi yoga. And many, many, many philosophers talk about this. Do your duty because it's your duty, like that. Yeah? Many, many. And it's very elevating. It's very, like that, you know, it's very heroic. He did his duty like that. Wow, you know. But we're people. So you want to do it for somebody. You want to feel love, not just, you know, for like that. So the Krishna says, do it for me. Then fourth chapter he begins to reveal who he is, right? You know, I'm this and that, I'm this and that, this and that, you know, goes on like that. So that's what I, you know, saying is it's not actually yoga yet, I would say. You know. In the very, very last verse of the second chapter? Yeah, that's the point I'm shooting at, yeah. Because by following these rules and regulations, one can go to the kingdom of God. So what is the Sanskrit for kingdom of God? Brahma Nirvana. You tell some Buddhist this, the guy would explode with, you know, frustration, like that, translating Brahma Nirvana as the kingdom of God. You know, it's like, like that. So, but so Prabhupada's like being very generous. I would say Prabhupada's being very generous in calling it Bodhi Yoga, like that, because it's not, it's a Sankhya, it's some small child. it's Sankhya at that point. And he hasn't revealed himself. As far as I can see, he hasn't revealed himself as being in this third chapter, he reveals himself as being like a, you know, a self-realized soul, like that. You know, so they don't have any karma to do. But then fourth chapter is where he actually reveals himself as being a different self-realized soul from other self-realized souls. Isn't that it? Yeah. Ajopishan, Ayayatma, like that. Yeah. But that's my understanding. Yeah? Okay. So Prabhupada ki jai.